Welcome to the RSO's second podcast featuring members of our orchestra, and it's a great pleasure to welcome Becky Asher today. Our principal horn since when?
1985.
Holy smokes. Wow. Well, first question is it French or is it horn?
It's horn. It's only the English, I think American people that call it the French horn. A lot of people have attributed it being the French horn because the French were supposedly the first people who made the circular shape to it that would fit around your body so they could go hunting with the horn encasing their body so it was ready to play their horn calls on the hunt. And at that point, they wanted to differentiate it from the English horn, which
is neither English nor a horn,
no,
it must be said.
But I think that the hunting horn at that time was a straighter horn with a different sound. So they wanted to say that it was the French horn.
Well, speaking of, you brought up something about the shape of the horn. Of all of the brass instruments, anybody looking at trumpets and trombones and tubas and horns next to each other are going to notice that the horn is shaped differently, and you know, talk about that circular shape.
Well, I think it's a beautiful shape.
Well, I didn't say it wasn't. It's different.
Yeah, but it is a conical tubing, which the trumpets and trombones do not have. It starts off with a very narrow lead pipe, and it gradually gets larger out to a very large bell. If you look proportionally at the trumpets and trombones, it's much larger than the bell than theirs. And like I said, the shape, the circular shape, originated from the horn players putting it around their bodies, and so that shape has kind of been maintained throughout the history of the horn, although it's certainly much smaller circle now than it used to be back then.
Would it sound different if it was more rectangular?
It probably would, but not that much. The shape kind of helps because we put our hands in the bell, and having the bell where it is, the mouthpiece where it is on the horn, makes that much easier to do than having a forward pointing bell. You certainly couldn't put your hand in it then.
Right. Well, that's another thing. I don't know if people notice this or not, because usually the horns are at the back of the orchestra, and you can't see very well, but your hands, your right hand is in the bell of the horn, and is that simply because you get the warm air coming out to warm your right hand, or why is that?
Oh, we say it's to catch the bad notes before they come out, but that seems to be impossible.
The other brass players call that the clam filter.
The horn is strange in that our sound does go towards the back of the stage, and so you hear a reflected sound because the bell is pointing backwards. But the hand in the bell is there because at one point there was a technique of horn playing called hand horn playing, where they were able to make the notes that were not within the harmonic series by closing their hands in the bell and forcing that note that isn't in the horn to come out.
Well, let's get the harmonic series. That's of course a physical concept, but concept of physics, I should say. But let's go back to the days of the natural horn, the natural trumpet, and what were the players able to play back then?
Well, the harmonic series, is. So those were the notes they were able to play, so most of the horn calls and all utilized those notes. For the trumpets, they play in the middle of the harmonic series, generally. The horn players play in the upper part of the harmonic series, and that's why we're noted for missing so many notes, because the notes get so much closer up there.
So that's your excuse.
Yes. But they figured out that they could get some of the notes that were within that series by closing their hand over the bell. Mm-hmm.
Now, for those of you who can't see, of course, which is everybody listening to this, Becky played that without using any of the vowels, just simply by putting her her hand in the bell of the horn. And you could hear the tonal difference when you put the hand in. It was a more muffled sound, but it was a different pitch.
Yeah. Well, the horns back then, too, were, I would say, smaller bore, smaller bell. So the difference between the hand covering the bell and the open sounds were less noticeable than the horns today. If you were actually going to play a piece using the hand horn, you would probably not be using the orchestral horns that we play today. But they were certainly much more adept at it than I am. It's a technique that you certainly
practiced it.
Yeah, you practice and right. You get it right.
So when did the valves come into being? When did you get the ability to play all 12 notes of the chromatic scale all up and down?
Valves were invented around 1815 or so, and they were largely in use about the middle of the 1800s, but a lot of composers liked the sound of the natural horn, so their compositions would still ask for the horns to play the natural horns, or they would put them in different keys, which kind of inferred that they were going to be on a natural horn. Much like we're resistance to change.
Yeah.
It took a long time for people to change to the vowels. If you spent your whole life learning hand horn technique, you're certainly not going to overnight switch to a valve horn. It's a very different...
Well, Brahms, that died in, 1896? Brahms never accepted the valved horns.
Right. Yeah.
He always wrote for the natural horns in all of his works, and long after everybody else had gone along with it.
Yeah. And the French were also very resistant to change with the horn.
They were holding out for everybody calling it the French horn?
I think. Could be.
So, what somebody, of course, many people learn, they pick up the horn, the French horn, in grade school, and they play the horn maybe in band. What would they find different or surprising about the horn that you're playing?
Well, a lot of people start on what we call the single horn. It's pitched in the key of F. It has three vowels, and that's what you learn to play on. The horn I play on is called a double horn. It's pitched in F, and it also has a side, if I put down my thumb trigger, we'll go into the key of B-flat, and that helps me with some of the higher notes to get them a little bit more accurate.
So that's B-flat as in the B-flat trumpet?
Yeah.
Same key as a B-flat trumpet.
And there are some horn players, particularly principal horn players in major orchestras, will have triple horns, which will have a high F horn to really try and get accuracy in those upper notes.
It's a lot of tubing.
Yeah. It is a lot of tubing. The triple horn is very, very heavy and very cumbersome. And to me, it's almost like learning to play a new instrument, much like between the difference between the hand horn and the valve horn.
Yeah.
You just have too many combinations.
If you unravel that thing, how much tubing would there be?
Well, it varies between like about 14 to 21 feet, depending on how many. If it's double, single, or triple.
Yeah, that's a lot of tubing.
Yeah.
And for somebody, if you get a chance next time you see a trumpet and a horn next to each other, look at the differences. So look at the difference between the mouthpiece and the bell, how much bigger the bell is on the horn, and the shape of the mouthpiece. Can you talk about that, the mouthpiece shape, and what that does to the tone?
Well, the mouthpiece is very much like a V, the trumpet.
It's like a funnel.
Yeah. The trumpet mouthpiece is much shallower. Ours goes much deeper. You have a wider circumference that your lips can buzz against, but because of that, you can play high and you can play low. You can play pretty low on the horn. Sometimes we get into tuba register. The high notes are a little trickier.
Yeah, I think sometimes people are surprised by when especially when they hear a passage like the Shostakovich Fifth with the low, real low horns. Go, wow, those are horns! Can't believe that. And it's a real kind of a it's a very it's a kind of a creepy sound.
Yeah,
Yeah. You're just not used to being hearing it played down there. But that I know that the V-shaped mouthpiece, it also makes the notes a little bit less secure than the trumpet. That the resistance of that cup-shaped mouthpiece, the trombones and the tuba have too, that helps center the note a little bit more. It just like you don't have any resistance there; it just keeps going.
There's another excuse for us.
there's a story. There are various variations of the story about the horn section of an orchestra that decided that every time they had a perfect concert, they were going to go out and celebrate with champagne, and they never did.
Yeah, I never got
the opportunity. it's so treacherous because you're playing high and you're playing with an instrument that just doesn't seem to want you to center the pitch. It wants to wander a little bit.
Yeah.
What's the in terms of solo repertoire, now, of course, there's not nearly as much solo repertoire, solo with orchestra, as there is for like violin or cello or piano. But in terms of the solo repertory, what are the biggies for the horn?
Well, there's Strauss, Richard Strauss. There's the two concerti that he wrote. His father was a horn player, so he certainly knew the capabilities of the horn, the sound of the horn, what he would like to use. And then the four Mozart concerti. Mozart had a friend who was a horn player who he wrote for, so it's always nice that composers have friends and, yeah. And we're able to have some concerti. And those are the two big ones that people do. There's also the Schumann Concertstück for four horns, which yeah. is one of the most treacherous pieces, I think, in the literature for horn.
Well, now that was written. I was just going to say that between the Mozart, of course, wrote that for the natural horn, right. And Strauss, of course, wrote it for the valved horn later in the 19th century. But early in earlier, about what's the Concertstück is in the 1840s, I think, if I remember correctly, something like that. Anyway, valved horns had been invented; they were being played, and that's what Schumann wrote it for. And really exploited the capabilities like brilliantly, but. It's just a fantastic piece. So what's in between those? I mean, there really isn't a whole lot of horn. People just didn't write concertos for the horn.
There are some. They're just not that interesting.
Yeah,
and so they just don't get played that much. There's some Russian composers. There's Glier and Glazunov and all. But
what kind of speaking of Russians? What kind of regional or national differences are there between, or have there been? I know there's less today, but between horn playing styles.
Well, the Russians, the French, and the Germans, a lot of times you'll hear a lot of vibrato in their sounds. Uh-huh. A very forceful sound out of the Germans and Russians, and more, I don't want to say lighter, but maybe kind of brassier out of the French. A little, yeah. But anymore, people are playing the same type of horn just about everywhere, and so
the type of horn does make a difference. There are certain horns.
Well, except the pumpen horns in Italy that they play.
So what's a pumpen horn? in relation to pumpernickel.
Well,
made of pumpernickel rather than brass.
Instead of valves, their mechanism for getting to the different slides in the horn. It slides out. You press down a lever and the valve slides out to open up the opening instead of having a rotary valve that will open the
opening. That sounds cumbersome.
Yeah, it is. But they say that with that, their slurs are supposed to be wonderful. Because
okay.
You can kind of sneak into it, I guess, a little more.
Well, a little more like a vocalist, a little bit.
Yeah,
okay.
Maybe. Yeah.
Well, speaking of valves, yeah, I wanted to mention this before. Of course, horns have rotary valves, which, if you look at a horn, you've got the little finger tabs, but then they connect by a lever mechanism to something round, which is the rotary part that rotates, rather than the piston valves that go up and down. Why don't horns have piston valves like trumpets?
I don't know. No,
I guess some trumpets do have rotary valves.
Right. Yeah. In France, they had more piston valves than rotary,
mm-hmm.
But that since has changed. But I think it has more to do with where the vowels came from. It seemed to me it's more of a German tradition, mm-hmm. And the Germans seem to like the rotaries.
And it's, of course, like a brass instrument, so it's made of brass. Yeah. Has anybody ever experimented making horns out of other metals?
Nickel silver is another one, and there's also one with copper tinged bells, but those kind of come in and out of fashion.
Does it make a difference in the sound, or just look
different? They have had blind tests before, and really no.
Yeah.
Because it depends so much on the player that it's really hard to tell if there's a difference in the sound of the horn.
There seems to be, in this country, two different styles of horn playing. One which is more trumpet-like, and the other which is a more mellow, rounded sound. Can you talk about that?
It depends on which orchestra that you happen yeah. to be in, and how they have a concept of sound over the whole brass section. There was a time many years ago where certain orchestras are only using Con 8Ds. And so when I bought a Con 8D, I decided I was never going to sell it because maybe I'd get in one of those orchestras that only use the Con 8D. But that has since gone by the wayside, and because there have been so many more horns and horn makers out there. My horn is actually made by a Chicago horn maker, Stephen Lewis, who's been in business for quite a while and has horns all over the world.
Yeah, very famous maker. The horns are also different. The horn section is different in the orchestra in that there's typically either two or four of you. And there's often two trumpets. There might be three trumpets. There might be four, but three is kind of the standard. And there's three trombones, and there's one tuba, of course. You talk a little bit about why the horns seem to come in pairs?
We're written four in pairs. Originally it was when we had four horn players, because the third and fourth horn would be in a different key. The first and second would be in one key, and then the third and fourth would be in a different.
That's before valves.
Before valves.
That's how composers could exploit all the different notes between the two horns. They could sort of fill in the gaps a little bit.
Right. And so it's tradition that the first and the third horn player are high horn players, and the second and the fourth horn players are low horn players. And at one point it was very explicit that you were either a high horn player or a low horn player. And around Beethoven's time, the low horn player was more the soloist than the high horn player. The high horn player would get some solos, but Beethoven really wrote for the low horn players, and a lot of the people who went out to play concerti in that time, the concerti written for them, they weren't that well known, the concerti,
yeah.
But they were for the low horn player because they had a much more resonant sound.
There's the second horn in the trio of Beethoven, of the Seventh Symphony.
Right? Beethoven wrote all these solos for second horn, so whenever you see a Beethoven piece coming up in the repertoire, if you're the second horn player, you have to watch out. Fidelio solo was written for second horn.
And of course there's the Ninth Symphony, the fourth horn solo in the third movement, which has lots of legends about it.
Yeah, people say, well, the valve was being invented, was in, supposed to be for a valve horn. Someone else researched about who was playing in Beethoven's time at that time. Was it written for a specific player? It's just unique in its sound.
Yeah, the legend was that the fourth horn player had gotten the valve horn. He wouldn't let anybody else play it, so Beethoven had to write it for him.
Yeah.
But there's a video available on YouTube of Johnny Late Gardner conducting the Beethoven Ninth, and the fourth horn player plays it all with hand, plays mm-hmm. hand horn, no valves in the instrument, all natural instruments.
Yeah. So yeah, this proves that theory. It's possible.
Yeah, yeah. Boy, it sounds very good. I mean, you hear that bah, wah, wah, you know, that yeah. little the hand and the bell technique, but he plays it very, very well. What orchestral repertory gets horn players turned on? What is What makes you afraid?
And what makes me afraid is Mahler first. The very first entrance of the horns. It scares me to death.
Oh, yeah, it's very soft.
It's very, very soft. It's the first thing you play. You have to wait for about a minute and a half, 2 minutes before you play. You have to have a huge amount of air. You don't want to break the phrase, but I always end up breaking it because I never have enough air in it. And you have to have this downward slur that works. And but I love playing Mahler. There are certainly lots of great parts and great things in there. I also love playing Shostakovich and Prokofiev, and Strauss on the occasion. Sometimes Strauss just is too much for me anymore.
Oh, well, you know. Any composers that you've accompanied, you've encountered in your career that you think just they really don't know how to write for horn very well, or...
There's just some pieces I don't like to play. It's not that they didn't write for horn. I just don't like playing them, like the Moldau. Because you're just on one note for about a whole page.
Yeah.
And it gets very tiring. It sounds great when you're sitting out in the concert, you know, in the audience. But, that one I can do without.
What about Beethoven's Seventh?
That one, if you've got the high notes, it's fun to play.
Yeah.
To me, Beethoven
A, so it's
the Beethoven Fourth is much scarier because there's just one little thing where you have to come in pianissimo on a high B flat,
mm-hmm.
and the worst thing is in those slow movements when you're sitting there without playing. And you're waiting and waiting and waiting and knowing you're going to have to make this entrance. That's the hardest thing in the world.
Yeah. Well, anything you'd like to play to demonstrate what that instrument can do? How old were you when you started playing? Well, maybe was it your first instrument?
I played piano, but then I started playing horn at 10.
Okay,
I was
which is a typical age for a wind instrument.
Yeah, because in my school, that's you got to choose your instrument and you play in the band, and I was going to play trumpet because my dad played the trumpet, and I thought I'd be the obedient child and use the instrument that was in the house, but he just said, why not the horn? And I said, sure. So that's okay. How it happened.
And was it a love affair from the beginning, or how did it go?
Very frustrating. I think a lot of times band directors will direct people to the horn who have a high threshold for frustration.
And boredom, yeah. The horn parts in band, like elementary school band music, are just terrible.
Yeah.
You play off beats and bop, bop, bop.
That's because a lot of times they think they're not going to have one, so they're not going to give you a solo part because it might be missing, or because we have so much trouble learning the notes to begin with, they kind of want to keep you hidden until you've figured things out for a while.
So when do they get to be better?
It isn't until the high school band that you start getting stuff, mm-hmm. I think. Junior high or middle school band sometimes might give you something, but very seldom. You might be doubling a sax part, you know.
The timbre is a little similar between saxes and horns, and for all the, you know, I'm not a big sax fan, but they are a little more secure in their attacks anyway than most learning horn players are. So you majored in music, applied music?
No, I got my first degree in music education.
Okay.
But while I was there, I decided that isn't really what I wanted to do, but figured that I would continue with that degree. And then got a job in... playing in Mexico.
So you made your way from Mexico to Nicaragua, isn't it?
There were a few way stations along the way.
Okay.
After Mexico, we went up to Vermont, and then down to Springfield, Massachusetts, and Nicaragua, mm-hmm. and Savannah, Georgia, and back to Mexico.
So how did you end up in Rockford?
We had been playing in Guadalajara, Mexico, and we decided we needed to come back to the States and be responsible parents, because my first daughter was born down in Mexico. And so we wanted to go back to the Midwest. My husband and I are both Midwesterners, and so we looked around for an orchestra that needed a spot for both horn and trumpet, and so we ended up in Rockford.
Well, we're glad you're here. You've been here for
a good long time.
Yeah, 5 years before I came, and 6 years before I got here. So, and I've thoroughly enjoyed having you as principal this whole time. Well, thank you very much for sharing some thoughts with us today, and we'll see you in the next concert.
All right.